Another Realm Media, exploring the unknown, where mystery meets reality.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Are you fascinated by the unexplained? Do you love delving into the mysteries of the paranormal, or how we respond to media that pushes us to the limit of our understanding? Do you love to dive headfirst into the exploration of the human psyche with meditations or channeled messages from beyond? Join our podcast network, Another Realm Media, and explore the unknown with us. From ghosts to aliens, cryptids to conspiracy theories, horror to sci-fi, we've got it all. Don't miss out on the excitement. Join us today and unlock the secrets of the universe. Email us at contact@anotherrealmmedia.com.
Get a tarot or oracle deck each month, a pagan or mind-opening book each month, an ugly mug essential oil candle each month, or one of each. Subscription boxes by Lemurian Books. Go to liberateyourmind.com today and use code TCE for 25% off your first order.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to another awesome sauce, fantastic, marvelous, spectacular episode of the Convergence Enigma with Josh and Stefan. I am your host, Stefan Gearhart, joined as always by my luxurious, he's got the best hair in the market, Mr. Josh Rutledge.
Best hair money can buy right there. No, it's all natural. Also, all of those little, you know, adjectives you used in the beginning, I feel like now I have to deliver. Like, we have to deliver now.
That I can't help it, man. That's the way I feel about it. So, but how are you guys doing?
We will. We'll deliver.
Good to see everybody coming back, or hear everybody coming back, depending on if you're listening to us on, on Spotify or Apple, or if you're watching us on YouTube. Either way, good to have you. We got a fantastic episode for you tonight. Like I said, we are going to be breaking open the Convergence files once again, but this time we're going to be talking about one that was given to us to take a look into quite a while back by the mysterious Terry Rist, Mount Shasta. We're going to be talking about Mount Shasta tonight.
Yeah, I'm actually really glad to get into this one. It was amazing to research. I myself have like just a really strong connection to the area, even though I've never been. It's on my bucket list, so to speak, although I hope I get there long before I have to think about my bucket.
You'll get to hang out with our good friend Olav.
Yeah,
he lives up near there.
Right. So yeah, it's just a really cool place, and I can't wait to tell you all about it. So.
And this is not where they make Shasta Cola.
No.
This is not. I found that out by doing a little research myself. So I was a little disappointed by that.
I think they sell it there though.
They might. If they don't, it's a missed opportunity.
Missed opportunity, right?
So. But yeah, like I said, I'm excited, man. Wrapping up the year this year, getting close. For those that didn't know, I'm moving back to Kentucky. So I'm leaving the desert to head back to the foothills of Ohio Valley, to go back there to be with some family and get my spooky on with Keith Age and all those good guys and, have some fun with that. Josh is going to hold down the fort here in Phoenix. So I'm getting ready to move here shortly. Actually, probably by the time this is aired, I'll probably already be there.
Yep. By the way, I'm changing the word fort to be spelled PH so that it matches Phoenix, just so we're clear.
All right, done. So anyways, before we crack open the Convergence files, Josh, let's get in to our psychic word of the week.
And now, the psychic word of the week.
All All right, psychic word of the week. This time I flipped the pages. Excuse me, sir. I flipped the pages and I landed on page 231. Of course, this comes from the Encyclopedic Psychic Dictionary by the eminent June G. Bletzer, PhD. Rest in peace, Honey Bear. We love you. We miss you. We still have never met you.
I have to point out,
supposedly,
it adds up to six. You know, it's still a good number. 369. That's a Tesla's numbers, right?
There we go. That's right. So the word that grabbed my the phrase here was fifth dimension, and not the band from the 70s.
I didn't know there was a band from the 70s called Fifth Dimension. Yeah. Now I'm going to have to go look that up.
Oh yeah, man, they're great. They're great. They did
rock. Is it punk? Is it, what is it?
It's like folk rock. They did like this is the dawning of the age of Aquarius.
We're going to get copyright. Stop. You got to stop.
So they did a cover of that Hair musical song. It's one of the most popular versions of it. But yeah, they're an interesting group. Anyways. So here's what Fifth Dimension says here in the book. Says in parentheses, esoteric. First definition, a faster rate of vibration than Earth that makes a transparent plane running through the Earth plane and throughout the atmosphere. Interesting. Interesting. Okay. Mm-hmm. Second one, principles, the fact of designs, patterns, and plans for all which takes shape and place on the physical plane. A level of consciousness where plans, original design, and individuality set up radiations that send forth rays with tremendous force behind them, holding the plans, design, and individuality in manifestation, where plans come into being.
Okay.
It's almost like The Secret.
I've never read it, but sure.
But you know the basic behind
it. I know the basis behind it, yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, that's basically that, where those plans and designs come into being. So yep. That's what I think anyways. Episode 3, known as the mental or mind plane, mind of the universe containing myriads of designs, prototypes, life forms, activity, and plans before physical Earth. Ooh. Hmm. Interesting. Number 4, interpenetrates the other plane's vibrational frequencies, but exists independently. Finally, number 5, artists and composers receive inspirational thought and work from this plane. Huh. So I wonder if for the last one, if that's where the muses lived, like the Greek muses.
Yeah.
Like Melipone and things like that.
Maybe.
And Calliope.
Also, I think I know why it probably says esoteric in parens in the beginning. And that's because, you know, in math and science, there's also a fifth dimension. And so it's making the distinguishment that this is not the math, the same as the math, science fifth dimension, which is, let's see, 4 is time, is fifth space, I think. I think that's what it is.
You're asking the wrong person.
Somebody comment if I'm completely wrong on that. But if fifth dimension in math and science is space, and fifth dimension here is the construct of our physical existence, then really there's a lot of relationship there between the mathematical fifth dimension and the esoteric fifth dimension.
And listen, I thought the fourth dimension, 4D, was smells and getting water sprayed in your face, because that's what it was at Disney.
Well, 5D is the little things you stare at and you got to make your eyes all wonky, and then there's
that's just 3D.
That's 5D.
That's 3D.
No, it takes time 3D. To get there. That's fourth. You got to go
through the fourth dimension.
And then it's an image in abstract space. That makes it the fifth dimension.
Wrong. It's 6D. Are you familiar with 6D?
Like
60s nuts.
You got me there, sir. You got me there.
All right, Josh. Let's get cracking. Let's crack and open in these convergence files. What makes Mount Shasta so convergency for us? What are we looking at? Aliens? Are we looking at Sasquatch ghosts? Like, what do we got?
So to take a line out of your book, yes and.
Ooh.
All right. So just like we did with the Superstition Mountains, I do want to start off looking at kind of the geology and geography of the area, because there may be some commonalities there. I mean, we looked at one set of mountains and here's another kind of mountain, right? Mountainous area that, you know, there may be some sort of commonality there. And so I think it's important to look at and explore what that could be. So from a geological perspective, which, by the way, I'd like to go back, and I can't believe I didn't catch this when I said it. But when I was talking about the Superstition Mountains in the last episode, I said something like it was 400 and something billion years old or something like it, 407 million years old. I have to go back and look at my research. So I said that's only like 5 billion years younger than the age of the Earth. So it is one of the oldest mountain ranges in the world. One of. The other one we're going to talk about next episode. That's a little teaser for you guys. All right. So so the geological history of what's called the Cascade Range, which is what Mount Shasta is a part of. It began
not to be confused with the dishwasher detergent.
Yep. Yep. I feel like Cascade should make a dishwasher detergent called Shasta. I mean, it's just right there.
Because the soda's got it already.
But nobody's going to drink Shasta Cascade. Well, I don't know. People ate Tide Pods, so I take that back.
Yeah, I was like, come on, dude.
Yeah, I forgot common sense isn't always common. So, anyways, they began forming around 40 to 25 million years ago. That's a pretty big range, right? So, you know, we're humans and we're fallible. As a result of tectonic activity kind of along the western edge of North America. So, I mean, relatively speaking, as like the age of the Earth is 4.7 or something like that billion years old, these are relatively young mountains for the area. The activity was caused by the subduction of the Pacific plate that's going underneath.
I've been subducted.
Yeah. Well, I wonder, like, if abduction is the taking of, subduction is the giving back?
Giving of?
I don't know. I need some geologist that might be listening to tell us.
What the hell is a geologist?
It's somebody who does electrolysis for mountains. Anyways, the growth of Mount Shasta volcano. Ooh, volcano. Mount Shasta itself started forming as a stratovolcano approximately 593,000 years ago during the Pleistocene epoch. The mountain is composed mainly of volcanic rock. I mean, I just cannot speak today. Mm-mm. Including basalt, andesite, and dacite, which were erupted during different stages of its growth. So during the Pleistocene epoch, Mount Shasta experienced multiple glacial advances and retreats. So these glaciers, you know, shaped landscape. You and I coming from, you know, the Kentucky, Indiana area, we know all about glaciers because you always hear, that's why Indiana's flat. Because the glaciers just scraped everything away. So glacial movement is a big to do and help to shape the Mount Shasta area. Recent volcanic activity Mount Shasta has been relatively dormant for the past few thousand years and no known eruptions in recorded history. However, the volcano is considered to be potentially active.
Eruptions
are possible. Yep.
Interesting.
There is some hydrothermal activity around Mount Shasta and the surrounding areas, which also helps like with hot springs. And that's why people go and sit in the hot springs for their rejuvenating, you know, kind of experience. And
always go nude.
Oh yeah. What's that? Wild Hogs with,
with John Travolta.
Were they like,
what a random movie.
It involved hot springs. Like that's how this brain works.
This is why you need more horror movies in your lexicon. There's a ton of hot springs in horror movies.
You don't
have to bring up Wild Hogs.
No, I could do without the horror movies. I don't need them. They do nothing for me. Last little bit is mud pots. Apparently, there's like basically mud. Lots of infused mud. People go and sit in the mud.
Mm-hmm. Like, it's good for your skin.
Yeah, but I just don't know. Like, is that where mud butt comes from?
No, that is no. Kentucky's where Mudbutt comes from because of the humidity.
Anyways, and so, of course, the geological history of the area is constantly being researched and discovered, and they're finding new things all the time. So geographically speaking, because it's a little bit different, there is some forces of erosion, including some of the rivers, the McLeod River, the Sacramento River, have cut through the landscape, creating these just beautiful valleys and canyons. Erosion by wind, water, and ice sculpted the terrain. Mount Shasta area has influenced the development of a diverse ecosystem, varying elevations, soil types. There's just all different types of vegetation there, forests, Douglas fir, pine, cedar. It's just again, I've only seen it in pictures, and it looks so inviting.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
I definitely have to go. I have to.
Yep. Agreed.
I will, as Picard says, I will make it so.
You will do also, as Picard says, making it so.
Right. I will complete his lifelong ambition by making
it to go to Mount Shasta.
He didn't say where to make it so or how to make it so. He just said make it so. Okay. All right. Mm-hmm. I felt like a little bit of Joe Pesci. Okay. Anyways, and of course, there in more recent history, human activities have shaped the geography of the area with logging and agriculture and urban development, recreational activities. And we'll get to it a little bit later, but a huge upspring of new age type endeavors in the area. So we'll get to that a little bit later on. So let's take a look at the cultural history of the area. So, of course, we have some Native American presence, which, you know, I know that there's still a lot of theory being discussed as like how Native Americans came to the north, you know, to the Americas. Native Americans came to the Americas. One of the theories is they came across the Bering Strait, you know, land bridge that was formed between what is now Russia and what is now Alaska. And so because of that, it would make sense they would come down, you know, kind of through that northern area. And so one of probably the older settlement locations would be the Northwest. So they were inhabited by Native American tribes for thousands of years until white people showed up.
And yay, white people.
Yay. Anyways, we have these are just some of them. We have the Wintu, the Modoc, Shasta. Look at that. And Karuk tribes are among the indigenous peoples who have called this region home. These tribes have a deep cultural connection to the land, incorporating the mountain into their myths, legends, and spiritual practices.
Excellent.
Then in the mid-19th century, around the 1850s, we, of course, get the big gold rush in California. And, of course, prospectors into the region, leading to all kinds of destruction. Yeah, yay, white people. then they started to develop towns and communities. And the town of Mount Shasta, located at the base of the mountain, was established in the late 19th century. It served as a hub for logging, agriculture, and trade in the region. From the late 19th century onwards, Mount Shasta gained popularity as a recreational destination. Its scenic beauty, including waterfalls, forests, and alpine meadows, attracted tourists and outdoor enthusiasts.
Heck yeah.
Mountaineering and hiking became popular activities, with climbers attempting to summit the mountain.
Now, I love hiking. I love mountain climbing, but I like small mountain climbing.
You're not going to be the, let me put chalk on my fingers and try to climb this straight.
No, I'm never going to climb like that. I'm going to climb a pre-made trail that goes up.
If it's paved, it's even better, right?
Oh, yeah, I wish. Like, my sister and I did the the second highest peak in Phoenix, which is Sunrise or Sunset Peak. I can't remember which it is. But we did that, and it's high up. We got up to the top, and we were like, we did it! And my sister's got a string of blood just coming from her nose because the air was so thin.
Yeah, that's something to laugh about. So anyways, so like if I go, my hope and plan is to connect up with a group, right? So there's groups that go out and they do kind of these like spiritual awakening type things. And that would be my thing. They just, so they hike up to where it's still forested. Like if you get above where it's forested, now you're getting into like the mountain where it's like just rock from the rest of the way up. So yeah, I'm not a, relevant movie reference. I'm not a Star Trek, where like I don't have the rocket boots to keep me from.
Yeah, what was that? The fifth one? Was that Star Trek 5?
I think it was. Yeah, because that's when they're camping and Spock has to go find his brother and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Sorry if I spoiled it for anybody. So last little bit about culture here is we got some conservation and environmentalism. And around 1984, the beauty and ecological integrity of the region led to establishment of the Mount Shasta Wilderness, protecting a significant portion of the mountain and its surrounding lands. So that's good.
That's really good.
We want nature to erode the mountain, not us. So.
Right.
So anyways, now we get into probably the stuff you've been waiting for.
Spooky stuff.
The spooky stuff.
Yes.
So
bring it on.
The lore and legends of the area. First off, one of my favorites. So loved it so much and named the company my wife and I have after it. The Lemurian Connection.
What?
Yep.
Really?
Yep. It is believed that after the fall of Lemuria, the last remaining peoples went to Telos, which is a city below Mount Shasta.
Hmm.
A subterranean city.
I knew there was some Hollow Earth stuff going on.
Yeah. And so a lot of the spirituality stuff, a lot of the New Agey stuff that happens in that area is kind of with that in mind.
That makes sense, because the man that claimed to be Terry Riss that we spoke with, a lot of his information dealt with Hollow Earth stuff.
Yeah, very much so.
And that makes sense.
And I think we did an episode, a couple, maybe last year or something, talking about the differences between Hollow Earth and Inner Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you all haven't seen that one, go check it out, because they're not the same. And so like in the case of Telos, it would be considered an Inner Earth city as opposed to a Hollow Earth city. So if you want to know the difference between the two, check that episode out. I'll link it here if you're watching it on YouTube. So then we've got some spiritual mystical significance. Mount Shasta has a long regarded place of spiritual power. We've already talked about it a little bit with the Native American tribes in the area, but like I said, there's just metaphysical groups and spiritual seekers are really drawn to the mountain, believing it to be a sacred site and the center for spiritual awakening. I would dare to say you could probably call it the New Age Mecca, maybe.
More so than Sedona?
I think so.
Hmm.
I think so. Especially because of that Lemurian connection.
Hmm, interesting.
I don't know. Maybe the two are equal. I don't know. Somebody else that's listening can let me know if I'm wrong.
Well, maybe it's all a matter of opinion. So
maybe it is. Maybe it is. Anyways, so next up, we have some Bigfoot and Sasquatch legends.
Which, no surprise here, California is where
Northwest. It's where
OG Bigfoot Patty, where she got seen. So yeah, and we're getting like Mount Shasta is near the border of Oregon. Yeah. Oregon. I don't know how you say it, but
one you play, one's a rock, I think. If you play it as a rock band, does that meet both standards? I don't know.
It does.
We'll get into a couple of those specific sightings in a little bit, but that's just kind of the general lore of the area. got some Native American legends that kind of reference prominent figure, stories of creation, heroes, and spiritual encounters. Mount Shasta holds cultural and spiritual significance in the mythology and cosmology of these tribes. And lastly, in kind of a generalized, we got strange phenomena and UFO sightings.
Sweet.
Mount Shasta has also become associated with claims of UFO sightings, extraterrestrial encounters, and other mysterious phenomena. Some believe that the mountain serves as a portal or landing site for otherworldly beings, attributing sightings and unexplained occurrences to these phenomena.
Kind of like the Sandia Mountains in Albuquerque.
Very much so. Very much so. Well, and it would make sense if there's, you know, the city underground. So,
yeah.
So now let's talk a little bit deeper into Telos and the Lemurians. Okay.
Okay.
So Lemuria is believed to be a lost continent or civilization that existed in ancient times. According to the legend, Lemuria was a highly advanced civilization with advanced technology, spiritual knowledge, and a deep connection to the natural world. However, cataclysmic events such as earthquakes or flooding have said to cause the subsequent submergence of Lemuria, resulting in its disappearance. So the subterranean city of Telos. Within the lore, it is believed that survivors of Lemuria found refuge within the earth, establishing a subterranean city called Telos beneath Mount Shasta. Telos is said to be a vast underground complex inhabited by an advanced race of beings known as the Lemurians. These beings are often described as highly evolved spiritually, technologically, advanced, and living in harmony with nature.
Very cool.
According to the legend and the lore, the Lemurians of Telos continue to exist in present times, living in an enlightened society within the subterranean city. It is believed that they have preserved the knowledge and wisdom of their ancient civilization, including advanced healing techniques, energy work, and spiritual practices. They are said to be connected with the higher realms of consciousness and maintain a deep connection to the Earth's energy. Another thing that I have since discovered since I compiled all this research is that you've probably heard mention a lot of the things around like Quetzalcoatl bringing all of this advanced knowledge to the peoples of Central America. We've also heard, you know, kind of the same tales for the fish people, the Dogons that came out of the sea in Africa. So one theory is that all of these different individuals were all like kind of like ambassadors or emissaries from Lemuria, from Telos, who were sent out to kind of restart the populations, if you will, because after the, you know, because obviously the amount of like energy it would have taken to sink a continent is significant, and so it had ripple effects around the world. So the Lemurians felt bad about it, so they sent out people to basically try to restart civilization. And so that's why so many of the descriptions of these saviors, other than the fish people in Africa, the Dogons, are very similar.
It reminds me of the flood story that has roots in almost every culture around the world.
Right, exactly. So just another little anecdotal piece of information here to think about Lemuria and Telos. It would make sense that they would want to put their city underground. So if you got sunk into the sea by an earthquake when you were on an island, probably don't start another civilization on an island. You know,
right.
Maybe go under a mountain. I don't know if I would have picked a volcano, but whatever.
Right.
Anyways,
maybe it would keep it warm.
That's true. I mean, a lot of hydrothermal vents around there.
Mm-hmm.
They make dents in the ground. That's how they form.
Yeah.
I was using the right word. Anyways, so Mount Shasta is regarded as a sacred site. We've already kind of established that. And a gateway between dimensions, often associated with higher consciousness, spiritual awakening, and transformation. So if you're wondering about Lemuria, I think we actually did an episode about it, and I will go back and link that episode to this one as well on YouTube.
I don't think we did. I think we just covered it as part of something else.
Oh, well, then maybe that's next year. Maybe
we'll
get into that next year, because I did, as a part of this, uncover a lot of the Lemuria type information, but I think it's a little bit more than would deviate us away from Mount Shasta.
Yeah.
So let's talk about some of the Native American tribes within around Mount Shasta area. So we've got not tribes themselves, sorry, their belief systems. We have creation stories. They considered the mountain to have a spiritual significance, believed to be a place of spiritual power where individuals can communicate with the spirits, seek vision quests, or receive guidance. The mountain is often regarded as a source of wisdom, healing, and protection. According to some Native American legends, Mount Shasta is guarded and protected by spiritual beings or powerful animal spirits. These guardians are believed to watch over the mountain and its surrounding lands, ensuring its sanctity and offering guidance to those who seek it. Native American lore often includes stories of shapeshifters, beings who can transform between human and animal forms. Mount Shasta is sometimes associated with these transformative beings who are believed to possess spiritual powers and a deep connection to the natural world. Maybe Lemurians are shapeshifters, because
like Michael Jackson in the Way You Make Me Feel video when he turned into that black jaguar.
Sure.
Black Panther.
What an obscure reference.
If you know, you know.
Well, I mean, I can say the same thing about, you know, Wild
Hogs. Nobody's watching Wild Hogs.
You crapped on that. Yeah, you crapped all over. You gave me a mud butt. So anyways, and then lastly, the Mount Shasta has been a sacred gathering place for Native American tribes in the area. It has been a site of ceremonies, gatherings, and spiritual rituals where tribes would come together to celebrate, pray, and honor their traditions. So let's look at a little bit of a Native American origin story for Mount Shasta. Okay. So one story involves the Wintu tribe, who are indigenous to the region. The Wintu people have a certain myth that includes a mountain as a significant elephant. Element, not elephant.
I was like, ooh, elephants in North America, they woolly mammoths.
Here's a summary of the Wintu origin story. So we've got the Wintu tradition. In the beginning, there was only darkness and water. The world was filled with chaos and disorder. Darkness and water certainly explains a continent sinking into the ocean. Just going to throw that out there. The creator, and I am going to horribly pronounce this name, Apishitnikichi.
I'll accept it.
Okay. His name is mentioned, their name is mentioned several other times throughout the telling, so I'm going to just call him Apshi. Apshi, yeah. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Decided to bring order and light to the world. He created the sun, the moon, the stars to illuminate the darkness and provided guidance to the people. As Apshi continued to shape the world, he created the mountains, the rivers, the forest, and the animals. One of the most important mountains he created was Mount Shasta. The mountain was said to be his home and the place where he would descend to interact with his people.
Cool. That's awesome.
Yep. Apshi is believed to have taught the Wintu people important skills and knowledge, including how to live in harmony with the natural world and the sacred rituals they needed to perform. He instructed the people on how to hunt, gather food, and use medicinal plants for healing. Very similar to the Quetzalcoatl, Dogon. Very similar.
Very interesting, Pally.
Yeah. I'm sorry. You sounded a little bit like Homer Simpson there. That was not Homer Simpson. But anyways.
No, it wasn't.
Mount Shasta is considered a sacred place where the Wintu people would hold similar ceremonies, offer prayers, and connect with Apshi. The mountain is regarded as a portal between the physical and spiritual realms, a place where the Creator's presence can be felt most strongly. Let's talk about some ghosts.
Yes!
Ghosts,
bring it on.
Ghosts in the area. Are ghosts in Mount Shasta called ghostas?
Ghostas? No.
No.
They're just called ghosts, Josh. Yeah,
somebody else asked me that question, and I figured I would ask it on here. I don't know why I said it. All right. So the ghost of McLeod Hotel. In the town of McLeod, which is near Mount Shasta, guests and staff at the historic McLeod Hotel have reported encounters with a ghostly woman dressed in a Victorian-era clothing. She's often seen in the hallways or sitting in the lobby, believed to be the spirit of a former guest or employee. The Haunted House of Weed.
Yeah, Weed, California.
In this nearby town of Weed, there are stories of a haunted house in South Davis Avenue. Residents and visitors have reported eerie sounds, disembodied voices, and the feeling of being watched. Some believe the house is haunted by the spirits of past residents. A phantom hitchhiker. A common ghostly encounter reported on Highway 97, which runs near Mount Shasta, involves a phantom hitchhiker. Travelers have claimed to see a hitchhiker along the road, often dressed in old-fashioned clothing, who suddenly disappears when approached.
Male or female? I guess probably it seems like it's male. Doesn't seem like a white lady tradition.
No.
Because usually, a lot of places have the white lady dressed in white,
Yeah, like she's
standing on the side of the road.
Right. Usually described as being like sad or, distressed or something like that.
This is just some dude.
Yeah, this is just some guy who was hitchhiking along.
This is Archibald.
In all actuality, probably got hit by a car, and now his spirit is kind of left repeating the same.
Or a carriage. He said old-timey clothing.
Yeah. Or a
good
horse.
Good old Archibald.
Yep. So then we have the ghostly miner at Iron Mountain Mine.
That sounds like a ride at like Cedar Point or Disney World or something.
Yeah, you just gave me the idea. They're going to make that now. So the Iron Mountain Mine is located in the vicinity of Mount Shasta. It's said to be haunted by the spirit of a miner who died in a mining accident. Well, that's a good thing to die of in a mine, I guess. It would be worse if he died of like malaria or something. But visitors have reported hearing unexplained footsteps, feeling cold spots, and seeing apparitions resembling a miner. And that's M-I-N-E-R, in case anybody was wondering.
Oh, not a miner. That's dumb, but I get you. It's a little kid.
Yeah. Shadowy figures at Castle Crags State Park. Now, so Castle Crags State Park is located south of Mount Shasta, has been the site of reported ghostly activity. Visitors have witnessed shadowy figures moving among the craggy rock formations and have felt a sense of unease or being watched. I don't know if this is pronounced Eureka, but it's Y-R-E-K-A.
It is today.
is a town near Mount Shasta. Is home to the historic Eureka Theater. Is believed to be haunted by a former actress who tragically died during a performance. Witnesses have reported hearing footsteps, disembodied laughter, and seeing apparitions backstage.
It was probably Macbeth. It's always Macbeth.
Like, just tangent real quick. Do you think Lincoln hangs around Ford's Theater?
Oh yeah, there are cases of people seeing him at Ford's Theater.
Huh, interesting.
Yeah.
Wonder if anybody's ever done like a legit investigation there.
I'm sure.
Yeah. Let us know if someone has. Spirit in the Sison Museum. The Sison Museum in Mount Shasta has been a subject of ghostly encounters. Visitors and staff have reported objects moving on their own, strange sounds, and the feeling of being touched by an unseen presence.
I could use that.
That's going to be the next invention. Ghost hands.
Ghost hands. I just need a ghost to play with my hair, please. Thank you.
It's just like it's an animatronic hand that just goes like this, and you just put it on your neck.
I would use it.
Anyways, so we got Lake Siskiyou. Sure.
Lake Suki Suki.
It's S-I-S-K-I-Y-O-U. Siskiyou. Siskiyou?
Siskiyou.
Anyways, reported seeing a misty figure walking along the shore or hearing whispers and laughter coming from empty areas near the lake. Last little bit here is in the Mount Shasta Cemetery, of all places.
Convenient.
Has been the report of paranormal activity. Witnesses have seen apparitions, unexplained voices, and experienced feelings of unease while exploring the grounds.
Yeah. That doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, I mean, it's a cemetery. So, yeah. Moving on to some unknown creatures.
Yes, cryptid time.
So we got, of course, we talked a little bit about Sasquatch and Bigfoot earlier. I mean, there's been a large, there's just a lot reported in the area for Sasquatch and Bigfoot sightings because of kind of the proximity, like you said, to Oregon and Washington, and just being that whole general area is just really covered in Bigfoot Sasquatch sightings. I read a summary that said that somewhere around, you know, like 50% of the North American Sasquatch sightings come from that area of the country. So,
wow.
But then I also read a report that said that 50% of statistics are made up. So, so shadow people near Mount Shasta. These beings describe dark silhouettes with human-like shapes that move quickly and disappear when approached. Winged humanoids. There have been a few reports of encounters with winged creatures resembling humanoids in Mount Shasta. Witnesses describe them as having humanoid body with wings similar to those of bats or birds. When you think about the description too of Mothman, and you realize that he was originally described as having more bird-like wings than, like, you know, moth-like wings, he probably should be renamed to Birdman, but then everybody would have to redo their merchandise. So, but I mean, there's also other tales across the West where various large birds, that type of thing. So maybe there are large birds that are coming out of Mount Shasta. So who knows?
Yeah. Maybe coming out from Telos.
Maybe. Maybe they're riding on the large birds. I mean,
yeah.
Who knows? We don't know. Maybe that's what UFOs are. They're just large
birds. They're just large birds. That's what Neil deGrasse Tyson probably thinks.
Probably does. Although he would probably discredit large birds too. So
yeah.
Lake monsters. Some accounts suggest the existence of lake monsters in nearby bodies of water, such as the Lake Sisusu that I couldn't pronounce before and I can't pronounce now. Witnesses claim to have seen large serpentine creatures with humps or coils moving through the water.
Lovely lady humps.
Yep. Lizard men. A few reports have emerged of encounters with humanoid reptilian creatures near Mount Shasta. Witnesses describe them as tall beings with reptile-like features, including scaly skin and glowing eyes.
That's creepy. I thought most of the lizard men were in the UK, in royalty.
Well, some are in the White House too, apparently.
But, yeah, apparently.
And some also sing on concert tours, apparently. shape-shifting entities, we kind of already talked a little bit about in the Native American stuff, but they're mentioned here amongst the creatures as well. And then the last little bit is phantom beasts. There have been claims of encountering phantom or ghostly animals near Mount Shasta. Witnesses report seeing spectral visions of familiar animals such as deer or wolves that exhibit ethereal qualities or disappear without a trace.
Interesting.
I mean, if you think about Mount Shasta potentially being this just really, I don't know, energetically elevated area, it would stand the reason that maybe you just see more there. Like, you know, it's kind of like... I'll use your Jeep analogy that you've used a couple of times. You want to buy a Jeep, all of a sudden you start seeing Jeeps everywhere. If you move into a bigger city with a larger population of Jeeps, you're going to see them more often. So if you go to an area that is more energetically attuned to be able to see just odd things, it makes sense you would see them more often.
Yeah, you would call it almost like a vibrational viscosity.
But still in my stuff. Be stealing my stuff off TikTok, man. Come on. Anyways, next let's get into some UFO sightings.
Finally. Yes.
All right. So 1950, George Adamski.
Yes, George Adamski. That's like the OG, not seeker. What's the word I'm looking for?
I don't know. Don't know what. Don't worry.
Contactee.
Contactee. Okay.
Yep. He's the OG.
So this was actually during near Mount Palomar, which is really close to Mount Shasta. So it wasn't actually at Mount Shasta, but close by. Mm-hmm. But he met, you know, the human-like beings from Venus. So.
Yep. I didn't realize that was close to Shasta.
Yep. Well, and it's not on my list, but I thought of it today as I was getting ready for this episode. Another really big area that's relatively close to the air to Mount Shasta is Mount Rainier.
Yeah.
It's where Arnold saw his stuff. So, mm-hmm. You know, it just seems maybe the area is a little bit of a hotbed in the Northwest. So,
yep.
Let's see, the 1974 Mount Shasta City incident. Several residents of Mount Shasta City reported seeing a large disc-shaped UFO hovering over the city. Witnesses claimed that the object emitted bright lights and displayed unusual maneuvers before disappearing into the sky.
So multiple people saw that.
Yep. Yep. 1982, Siskahuya County sighting. I'm just going to pronounce that word differently every single time I say it. That's going to become my thing. Multiple witnesses in Siskahuya County, including law enforcement officers, reported observing a triangle-shaped UFO hovering low in the sky. The object was described as silent and emitting multicolored lights before abruptly disappearing. 1987. I'm going to give you all the words except for the name, and you see if you can pick out the name. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Claimed to have had worked as a government geologist, spoke about an alleged underground alien base near Mount Shasta. This person asserted that he had personal encounters with extraterrestrial beings while working on a construction project at the base.
Bob Lazar.
Phil Schneider.
Oh, Phil Schneider. Oh, Phil Schneider. His story's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. So there you go.
They need to make a movie about Phil Schneider. I would watch that.
They do need to make a movie. Like, Spielberg did a great job on his Netflix documentary. He covered some great cases. Spielberg, if you're really interested in UFOs, make a movie about Phil Schneider.
I mean, you got action. You got everything. If you guys don't know the story of Phil Schneider, check it out because it's crazy. Even what happened to him at the end of his life.
Yeah. There was a dude involved that. Can I say asshat on YouTube?
Yeah.
Okay. There's a dude involved that's an asshat. Yeah. Anyways, Phil Schneider, check that story out. The more you know. Bing, 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 bing. In 1997, the Lake Siskahuaya incident, multiple witnesses camping near Lake Siskahuaya reported seeing a large triangular-shaped craft silently gliding across the sky. The object displayed various colored lights and moved at an unusual slow pace, before disappearing from sight.
Interesting.
So that's actually two. Span of about 15 years apart for the Lake Siskahuaya incident.
Yeah, and I like that in these areas, it seems to be multiple witnesses. It's not just like one guy.
Yeah, yeah.
Besides Phil Schneider.
Yeah, I feel like there's probably other people that could corroborate Phil Schneider's story.
Oh, yeah, but they're afraid to.
But they're afraid to, yeah.
Yep.
So, in 2002, a group of campers near Mount Shasta reported witnessing a bright spherical UFO in the night sky. The object was described as moving erratically, changing colors, and emitting a pulsating light before vanishing. In 2007, in Weed, California, reported seeing a cluster of red and orange lights hovering in the sky. Witnesses claimed the lights formed geometric patterns and moved in unison before slowly fading away. See, these are all the kind of cases that I'm pretty sure somebody could come up with like a podcast where all they do is read amazing UFO cases.
Right.
I'm pretty sure it's out there. Isn't that what Ryan Sprague does? I don't know. But anyways, you heard it here, folks. So don't listen to his podcast. Listen to ours. It's better.
Come on. We love Ryan Sprague.
We love Ryan. Ryan is an awesome dude. Ryan, we have two people. He has one. You know, it's just, you know. Anyways, abduction cases. Enrique Villanueva. Okay. Enrique Villanueva, I can't even say it fast. I'm just going to try to say it slow. Claimed to have been abducted by extraterrestrial beings in Mount Shasta in 1977. He described being taken aboard a spacecraft where he encountered humanoid aliens who communicated telepathically with him. Claude Hennig reported an abduction experience in 1978 near Mount Shasta, claimed to have been taken aboard a UFO and subjected to medical examinations and interactions with humanoid beings. So this next one is not directly associated with Mount Shasta, but this is in Allegash, Oregon, which is close, and that is Debbie Jordan Cobble's abduction. Along with her three friends, she claimed to have been abducted and subjected to a series of experiments and examinations by extraterrestrials. I think we covered this.
Yeah, I was about to say, don't we know that Allegash?
Very early on.
But I thought that was something different.
I thought
that was dudes on a boat.
No, I think you're thinking of another A place.
I don't know. But I'm pretty sure we've covered Allegash.
Yeah. So anyways, if we haven't, we'll do it next year. So
yeah, Allegash abductions. This was in Allegash, Maine.
Okay.
It was four friends who were in the wilderness and they were on a boat. They were fishing on a boat when a light came down.
I do remember this. They shined a flashlight at it.
Uh-huh.
I remember us talking about saying, if you saw this, why would you shine a flashlight at it? And then they were abducted.
Yep.
So
yep.
If you see a bright light and you're on a boat on a lake all by yourself, maybe don't signal the light.
Yeah, know? Go away.
So the Sky Sampson case, alleged abduction near Mount Shasta in 1994. She claimed to have been taken aboard a UFO and encountered tall, gray-skinned beings who formed medical examinations on her. Performed. Let's see here. So Suzanne Hansen was a New Zealand UFO researcher and documented the abduction experiences of a woman named Allison. I don't think that was her real name. Allison claimed to have been abducted near Mount Shasta in the late 1980s and early 1990s, describing encounters with Nordic looking extraterrestrial beings.
Interesting.
And then the last little one that I've got here is Dr. Jonathan Reed, who highly controversial abduction experience in 1996. He claimed to have encountered an extraterrestrial entity in the forest and later found himself in possession of a preserved alien body.
Interesting.
Very much so.
Yeah, that would be cool to find.
Yeah. You know, imagine if like Travis Walton, right? He comes to sitting on the highway somewhere, like he rolls over and it's just an alien body just laying.
Yeah. He'd be like, I didn't do it.
I didn't do it.
I didn't. It wasn't me.
All right. So getting into a little bit of the occult type stuff that happens around the Mount Shasta area. So we've already talked about the Lemurian teachings and a lot of the stuff that's kind of associated with that. There's a lot of New Age retreats and gatherings that take place. You know, events involving workshops, meditation practices, rituals, that sort of thing. The Mount Shasta area has attracted various occults and esoteric groups over the years. These include organizations practicing alternative spirituality, such as the Rosicrucian Fellowship, the Summit Lighthouse. Their teachings and rituals incorporate elements of esoteric knowledge, mysticism, and metaphysics. The I Am activity is a religious movement founded in the early 1930s, gained popularity in the Mount Shasta region. Adherents believed in the presence of divine energies and claimed to communicate with ascended masters, including Saint Germain. The movement promoted spiritual transformation and self-realization. Crystal energy healing practices. There are many shops and things around the area where you could do all of that fun stuff. Earth magic and elemental encounters. Some individuals who visit Mount Shasta and its surrounding areas report encounters with nature spirits, elemental beings, and earth energies. These experiences are often associated with the belief that the mountain holds a special connection to the natural world. So there have been various spiritual groups that have gone out there to do ceremonies and rituals. There's a lot of people go to Mount Shasta to do channeling activities, experience psychic phenomena, such as insights and visions while in the vicinity of the mountain. And then lastly, just the Native American mythology and legends, including stories of supernatural beings and sacred sites.
Wow.
So that is all that I have, if that wasn't enough, for Mount Shasta. It sounds even more now like an intriguing place that I definitely mm-hmm. have to visit. It's only a 13-hour drive for me, so I'll have to make that drive, you know, sometime. not by myself. I would be better with a person, but person I know would be beneficial, or you know, best case, but somebody I don't know, I guess, would be okay too.
You pick up the hitchhiker.
I can pick up the hitchhiker along 97. So there you go. It's a fascinating place full of such, I'm a little conflicted because on the one hand, a lot of the experiences that people have there from a scientific perspective, you could say, well, it's a volcano. It's probably emitting a lot of toxic gas from various vents. Maybe people are just getting high and hallucinating, right? Mm-hmm. And I guess that's a possibility. But the things that are happening, around the surrounding area, as well as, it's a park. Like, I feel like somebody would say, hey, instead of ozone action day, it's a toxic gas action day, right? Don't go outside today because the volcano was putting off more than usual toxic gas. So, I don't know. So from that regard, because I would think that most people would act in the realm of public safety and warn people about toxic gas and those types of things, that the experiences that people are having, maybe are true and they're really having those experiences. And that place really does hold some sort of a mystical connection to something that we have long forgotten.
Yeah, I mean, and not to sound hokey, but I mean, Mount Shasta is literally the epitome of a convergence enigma. Mm-hmm. Why is there so much happenings there, from spiritual to metaphysical to paranormal to, to it all?
Right. Well, and we talked about the superstition mountains, right? So you could say, well, it's the age of the mountain. Well, those are really old, but Mount Shasta is relatively young.
Yeah.
That's where it gets interesting for me, is when you start to look at places like Superstition and Mount Shasta, and you try to compare them in some way. Other than they're both a mountain, that's the only thing that you really that holds true across comparison. So it's really hard to then sit down and say, both of these places tick all of these boxes, so we should go look in places that tick all those boxes, because again, other than they're mountains, there's not really a lot of commonality between the two.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, if any of our listeners or watchers out there have had any experiences at Mount Shasta, please leave a comment below on YouTube or send us an email, contact@theconvergenceenigma.com. We'd love to hear your stories, just to kind of verify that it's not just stuff in the news, that everyday people are experiencing things as well.
Yep. So very cool.
Yep. Well, I appreciate it, Josh. Thanks for putting all this together, man. Hopefully one day we can go out to Mount Shasta. I'd love to be able to go out there with you if I could. Maybe even bring Santosh. And speaking of Santosh, I want to remind everybody before we go to check out our other show that is on YouTube as well as Spotify and Apple, which is Astral Stew, that involves the two of us and Santosh. You can find that on our YouTube page, Another Realm Media. Or just search Astral Stew into Spotify or Apple Podcasts, and you can find that there. We talk about all sorts of metaphysical, crazy, spiritual sorts of stuff, and it's a hoot.
It's a hodgepodge.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like a stew is.
It is. It is. That's why it's called Astral Stew. And Josh, I know your show, Etheric Transmission, is going to be changing gears, if you wanted to quickly talk about that.
Yep. So I'm still going to be doing occasionally some kind of channeled messages that come through on the podcast, but I'm also going to be talking with people who have experiences, and I really want to kind of explore not just the experience that they're having, but what it means to them. Like that's the thing that I think all of us have in common, that who have had experiences, is it affects us in some way. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I really want to explore. What is it? What's the human side of the UFO phenomena?
Right. Exactly. So I'm very interested in seeing what you got involved. Etheric Transmissions with an A. You want to definitely check that out. Other than that, anything else before we go, Josh?
Yeah. So one last thing. If you go out to theconvergenceenigma.com/store, it takes you to our TeePublic store. We have a lot of great shirts on there, including a couple by or that feature the likeness of Shane Hurd, of
our good buddy Shane Hurd,
of Eric, Phoenix MUFON. But there's a lot of other great shirts with Sasquatch and Krampus and all kinds of stuff. So,
and our buddy in the UK, John Matthews, has verified we do ship internationally. So,
well, at least
he's gotten some shirts. So, so hey, that's international, man.
Yeah, that's true. And then, but all of our designs that are available out there are shirts, are also available on pretty much every other product that TeePublic offers. So like mugs and socks and pillows and tapestries.
Clocks.
Or whatever, you know.
Stickers, magnets.
Every time I hear tapestries, all I can think of is the Indiana Jones who's like, I'm here to say the tapestries, you know. But, so anyways, please check out the store.
Yeah, absolutely.
Everything that we sell just helps us a little bit more to be able to just keep this thing kind of up and going. So, I mean, the website costs money, all that kind of stuff. Anything helps out. We really appreciate it. So
that's right. So we're going to go ahead and get out of here. But thank you guys so much for tuning in, as you usually do, to the Convergence Enigma with Josh and Stefan. We are out of here. This has been Stefan. Just a reminder to keep your eyes on the skies.
And this has been Josh. The truth is now.
And remember, folks, keep questioning. Never stop questioning and never stop searching. Good night, everybody.
Good night.